Well, you know, this is so small, we're probably just going to do the soap portion and just talk about it, because I was going to say there's no time for questions, but we've got time for questions. I'm going to give you my prepared opening, though. My prepared opening was, well, actually, I'm Jerry Winning, Norwood. Our office in Norwood, worked for Walters Chlor Health. And about 2.5 years ago, I managed to break my tibia and fibula in about 16 different places. And about a month after that, I got two things. The project to integrate our back office applications with Salesforce.com and a big pile of narcotics. And I really, really, really liked doing integration. At least I was told that I really, 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 really liked it at the time.
Drugs and integration.
Yeah. Better living through chemistry, yeah?
Right. I do remember that nothing was hard. What was hard was finding the basic, very basic information. Things such as the XML you have to assemble to pass to the SOAP API. It just, the information just wasn't out there. There's a lot more now. Every day, more things hit the internet. But still, what you're going to get out of this presentation, or you're going to get from the source code example, is everything you need to integrate. And it's just not that hard. You'll actually be able to go through the source code on your own. But I'm going to run through it quickly just to talk about the concepts, the XML, why it exists, more than actually focus on the code. So you'll be able to take this code, do what you want with it. Try not to sue me. We're going to go over three APIs. Well, actually, we're probably just going to go over the SOAP APIs, but there are three. The SOAP API is full-featured. We're going to use the Progress SOAP control, the SEX parser and reader, because we're going to assemble XML, and we're going to have to pull data out of a big XML string to use it. That is the full-featured API that you're going to use if you're going to have a business application integrating with Salesforce.com. It has crazy operations such as merging two things together. The REST API that we'll try to cover a little bit if we have time is much smaller. It doesn't seem to have everything you need to integrate an app. It's great if you want to write a little phone app, but you're not going to be able to integrate your business application with Salesforce using just the REST. The Bulk API, we definitely will not have time to go over too much, but it allows you to log in using the same SOAP login or using a REST login. And then it's a REST-ish is what they call it. It's just posting to URLs like you would for REST, as opposed to a structured SOAP type of interface. So if you're using the SOAP API, you're going to have to download a WSDL from Salesforce.com, because when you use SOAP, you need a WSDL file, which is just an XML file which describes all the operations, all the schema, everything you're going to do. So if you were in, if you've used SOAP before, you know sometimes you can point to an XML file on the internet. You can't do that with Salesforce because you might have added fields to your tables that no one else did. So you actually go in and hit generate. If you've added a field, you have to do this again. You get the WSDL, you download it. Change the extension to .wsdl and save yourself some aggravation finding it later, because we'll save as XML. And that file is going to have all the definitions that the Progress SOAP object needs to be able to talk to the SOAP API. Everything is XML. You're going to assemble some XML, and then you're going to parse XML that comes back. When I was developing this, it was so hard to find the information, and one of the hardest things was just knowing what the XML should look like in the body. Unlike other SOAP APIs, where you have a bunch of parameters being passed, and you can use something like SOAP UI, you can see the parameters, put in values, and hit go. Most of the operations in this SOAP API are simply in one input parameter, one output. The input parameter is one big string of XML that you've assembled describing what you want to have happen and what the field names are. And again, because you may have customized field names, it can't possibly have the right information unless you assemble it. I stumbled across this page, which I'll show you real quick. And this page was not this nice 2.5 years ago. It's gotten much nicer because people must have found it useful. And it's all the core calls within the SOAP API, as well as what the XML, the SOAP operation should look like. So we'll go into the sample for create. And everything with Salesforce is up in the cloud, and it's HTTPS. So you can't even put something in between and look at what's happening. There's just a black hole. So this was great that somebody posted all the operations. You get to actually see the SOAP. You can see the header that we'll talk about in a little bit. And down here is the body where you actually see a create XML where it starts an S object node, the field names, all that fun stuff. But we'll go over this a lot better in a little bit. The hardest part the most complicated portion of this entire demonstration is going to be just the login using SOAP. It's not that complicated, but it is the most complicated portion. First of all, we're going to log in with username and password plus security token. Even if your password is something awful like password, you cannot log into the API with just your password. You go in through the interface, you generate a security token for the user that's going to log in, specific to that user. It's a big, ugly string, and you add those together. So every time you're passing a password, it's actually password plus security token, and we'll see that in a bit. And after we log in, it's going to give us back a session ID. That's the session ID that you've just created. You just logged in, you've got a valid session. From that point forward, that session ID has to be on every SOAP header in order for that to know who you are and to validate that you're allowed to get to the data. It also passes back the new endpoint. When you log in, it uses login.salesforce.com is the URL you go to. It's in the WSDL, but that's not where your data lives. Your data lives in your instance, because there's many instances of salesforce.com. In my case, the URL is https:na14.salesforce.com, something like that. And they may change that on you tomorrow. You don't even know it. So when you log in, it's going to give you back the proper endpoint that you're going to have to point to. And we'll see that in the code as well. This is just an example in the interface, salesforce.com, where you go into the setup menu and you say, reset my security token. It emails you the security token as text. And that's what you're going to have to add to your password.
So that's a
this keeps breaking.
That's a
until you
device.
Go in and say, reset it again.
It's not a session by session
nope.
sort of thing.
Okay. And I've seen it. When you reset your password, I've seen the security token go bad sometimes.
Okay.
The bulk API. We're not going to cover too much on this, but it's a cool API. You can log in using SOAPs. You don't have to set up OAuth 2. You don't have to set up anything REST. Everything you can be familiar. And it's asynchronous. So you basically are posting to a URL. You want to create a job. The job has some parameters, such as it's against the account object. It's a query. I want XML back. Then you're able to create one or more batches within that job. The batch is actually what's going to do the work, where you say, I want all accounts in the system. The batching allows you to have multiple asynchronous batches going at the same time, speed things up. I've never had to use it. We actually pull our entire Salesforce database almost down in one batch of each table to build, put into a progress temp table and combine that with our progress data in our progress database and create pivot tables for our end users based on both information. So we actually do that overnight. We use the batch API to pull a whole bunch of data into put it in globs, but then it goes back into the temp table when we generate the reports. There are limits in salesforce.com, and more so with writing than reading in the batch API, so you will have to break it up into batches if you use this a lot. But that's really the only use we have for it, is pulling a ton of data to then create reports off. The REST API, I'm sure you've seen 100 things about REST so far at this conference. There's no WSDL file, there's no SOAP, there's no structure overkill. You're just posting to URLs, getting back, you know, assembling JSON, sending it off, getting back some JSON. Its authentication is OAuth 2, but it does allow for username and password. So you don't have to set up your own web application that gets a callback to pass back credentials. You can actually log in and pass in a username and password, and the callback procedure is ignored, and just be logged in, get back your access token, and that access token will have to be on every future REST call, just like SOAP had. And again, this we will have time to look at in examples. The OAuth setup that I was talking about, it is in the Salesforce interface. Basically, you say create a new application. It gives you a consumer key and secret. When you log in, you have to pass these two values, just like you're passing a username and password in a security token. And it knows to come to this application, what you've set up for access. In this case, you have full access. You can create other applications where they can only have read access, for example. And then that consumer key and consumer secret, when they log in using those, will only have read access. And in this case, I put Pug Challenge Demo because it's just not used, because we're going to log in using username authentication instead of a full OAuth callback, blah, blah, blah. As I mentioned before, the REST API does not have the functionality of the SOAP API. It's maybe it will one day, but I played with it a little bit for mobile apps. It's cool, it's fast, but if you're integrating your back office, you're going to need to use SOAP. Cool. What was that?
Is the REST API for Salesforce?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they REST API. So there's also an alternative to replication. This is an integration conference session, so I did want to mention that we did have another situation. Sales reps wanted to look at some sales information maybe once a week. It is gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes of data, but once a week they want to look at a tiny little piece of it at most. And space is money. Salesforce is not cheap. And replication costs resources. You're going to have machines doing this. You're going to have people maintaining it. It didn't make sense to push all this data over there for a couple of people to look at a couple of times. We came up with an idea. I'm not going to talk too much about the security that we had to implement to do it, but in essence, we had the Salesforce developer create an iframe within the Salesforce interface. So I'm going to jump over to that real quick. So here's the Salesforce account. You know, when you scroll down, you have these blue different sections. Well, what we did is within one of those sections, they created an iframe. It calls our web server running ext.js Sentia pages, which call web speed, getting back JSON, just to populate their data grids. The end user, this looks like it's in Salesforce.com. It looks like it's part of it. They have no idea that they're not even in Salesforce.com because it's right in that page. And we have complete control over this. We don't need Salesforce developers to create new widgets and different things. We can just add tabs to this landing page. And it worked out really nice. And it saved a lot of money.
That's cool.
The demo. All right, we're going to look at the source code. We're going to go very quick. It's very simple code. Like I said, I'm going to focus more on the XML. And just to go back to this page. Yeah, we'll just do that. We don't have a big enough crowd to worry too much about it. And of course, this is a starting work to a framework. There's always gotchas. This is, you know, there's no way to ever create a generic replication interface with any API. You get, weird things are going to happen. Things like they use semicolons, you use commas. It's going to be different. Things you don't expect, such as an account is owned by a user, a user that's using Salesforce.com. And if your Salesforce admin goes and retires a user, and your replication code tries to assign that account to that user, it's going to error out the API. It's going to say, no, you cannot do that. And it's an error. And you have to handle those errors. You can't just move on with your replication. So you have to be prepared. And if no one told you that, you don't know that's going to happen. You're going to hit a million of those. All right, so let's jump right into the source code. The thumb drives are up here. Have all the source code. You can take it and go through it later if you'd like. It's organized. You can barely see this part on the screen, but the bulk examples are under bulk examples directory, rest examples. SFDC is the actual little bit of framework. It's not so much a framework, except that there's a little bit of generic assembling of SQL, the OSQL, as well as data values. The SOAP examples are under the SOAP examples, and then util is just for this demonstration. I have a little menu box, message boxes, and different things. So to log into Salesforce.com, first we're going to create a new instance of our Salesforce.com library and call the login method. So we'll take a quick look at the login method. And let's open up the right procedure. I can't believe I can actually see that from here. Move that over. I apologize, I actually thought this was going to be canceled when we were first starting, when no one showed up. All right, methods. And I can't see this on the screen. We could not get it working. Don't know why. So this is going to be lots and lots of fun. All right. JJK login to SFDC. All right, this is a two-step process. The first thing we're going to do is get that WSDL I mentioned that I download that has everything we need for SOAP to work. And we're going to do our first login to Salesforce.com. This runs in a persistent procedure that I fired up in the constructor of this class. The reason that there's two pieces to this is the progress SOAP object uses a callback procedure. Can't do that in the class yet. And the SACS parser that we're using to disassemble the XML and get it values also has callback procedures. So this class became a wrapper to the procedure. So we jump over to Salesforce.com procedure and look at the login to Salesforce.com. So of course we have a username. There's that security token that got emailed to me that we saw earlier, how we did it. You don't get to see my password. I stuck it in the registry so I don't have to keep typing it. Secured password is the password plus the security token, just as I promised. And we're going to use the progress SOAP stuff. This I took right from a KBase on how to do it. You create a server, connect using the WSDL. So there's the WSDL file. Login.sales, http://login.salesforce.com comes right from the WSDL, so you don't have to remember it. And we run the SOAP, setting the handle, and we can call. Now we can call all the operations within that SOAP API. The only one we can call right now, believe it or not, is just login. So we call the login operation, passing the username and password. We get back a result. So let's fire that up so we can see the result. I actually copy that result to a text file to show later. So this is what came back from our login. It's got a whole bunch of information about the session that we just created. The only two we care about for this purpose is the session ID, because this is going to have to be passed. This big, huge, ugly string is going to have to be passed to every SOAP call from this point forward, as well as the redirect server URL. This is my instance of Salesforce, so that's where I have to make all my API calls. Login.salesforce.com only accepts login as the operation. All the other operations are in the other endpoint. So, coming back to here, we got back this XML. I used the sex parser to parse out those two values. I'm not going to go through that, but you can see it in the source code later if you want. I run parse result. I get back the session ID and the server URL from that. Going back to the class now, the instance URL is used for the bulk API. Just pretend that's not there for now. We now have to reconnect to SOAP again using the correct endpoint, that NA14. We don't want to be in login.salesforce.com because there's no data there. We pass in the WSDL, we pass in the new endpoint, and that session ID we got. Going back over to the SOAP API, we'll see the SOAP connect. Same syntax, create a server. Now when we connect, we still point to the WSDL, but we have to use a new endpoint. The host won't match, so we have to use the no host verify option and the binding source is SOAP binding. This time when we run SOAP and set a handle, we're going to keep this in procedure for future use, so this won't be destroyed this time. And one cool thing we're going to do is we don't want to have to keep adding a SOAP header to every SOAP call with the session ID. We want to do this once and have it automatic from this point forward. So first we'll create a SOAP header object, and then we'll establish the callback procedure so that every time we call an operation HSOAP, it will call this callback procedure and add the SOAP header with the session ID. So just to cover that quickly, the create SOAP header procedure, actually from another Parker's KBase, creates a SOAP header object, put together some XML, which is what Salesforce wants. Why is this so thin? And the session ID node has that session ID that we passed in it. So we have a handle to the SOAP object, and then the callback procedure, that's all it is. Every time there's a SOAP call made, it's going to call this callback procedure, and that SOAP header is going to be sent back so that it adds the SOAP header to the call. And we saw that earlier right here. That's all it does, is it sticks that header on every call with the session ID so that you're authenticated for every call. And there I am parsing the session ID out just to prove I really did it. Going back to the class and going back to my stub. And we've logged in, but we didn't actually do anything. We logged in and then we went away. So big waste of time. So let's actually do something. We'll do a simple insert. As I mentioned, this tiny bit of framework, its purpose is to put data into a temp table, push it to Salesforce, or to send a query to Salesforce, put the data in a progress temp table. The progress temp table, for the little bit of automated generic coding, I made the fields the name of my progress database tables. The serialized name attribute is the name over in Salesforce. This not only lets you see the field mappings right here in a text file, it's so that the generic code, when it loops through the temp table, can build SQL based off the serialized name, or when you get data back, when it says, I had a name one, you know it's going to go into the custom name field in the temp table. Very simple, looping through temp table, getting the names, the serialized names code. I left it even though it's a demo because it's not that hard stuff. So if we look at the stub, first thing we do is log in. We already went through that code. We then jam a record into the temp table. We're going to create an account called blah, 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 pogs. And we're going to push that off to Salesforce using the insert object from temp table method in a little bit of framework. So we'll take a look at that real quick. A, B, C, D. And actually, let's fire it off so we have it there. I've successfully not chosen mobile applications so far. I'm pretty proud of myself. All right. So the first thing we have to do is generate that XML that we're going to pass off to the create operation. This is what it looks like. It's a create. It has an S object of type account. And here's all my field values that are going to be pushed off the insert. Notice it's only the field values I care about. There's also other fields such as number of employees or, I already have that one. But the other fields, you don't have to put them up here. In fact, if you put them up here with no value, it'll never happen. So it just generates the field you care about. And that generate update create XML is up here in the class, and you can go through it later. It really does. It just loops through the temp table, looking for records, and then using the serialized name off of the field names to figure out what to stick into the XML to build that. You can use whatever you want to build the XML. I just happen to use a temp table and use a serialized name to spit it out, and it worked out really nice. All right. Insert. Once we have that XML, we're now going to call the insert S object from temp table in our persistent procedure. And all it does is run create, the create operation in SOAP, passing in that XML, getting back some XML. So it's passing in this XML. Of course, the SOAP head has been appended, and all that fun stuff's been done by progress. And we get back a result, success, true. And we get back the ID to the field, to the record that was created in Salesforce. That's the Salesforce ID. Now, we did pass in our account ID. We get back their ID. I strongly recommend that you store this ID in your progress database in an extension table. Not only does it make data validation later really easy to, you know, you see the ID over here, you know what it should be over on this side. You're going to need that ID to do a create, to do an update and a delete. You can't say update this record where my ID equals 7. You have to say the Salesforce ID equals that value. So rather than have to keep doing API calls to get their IDs, they're in your database. It's much faster, much handier.
And that's not something that changes like a row ID in a database, or?
That's correct. That is their unique string. It's a string.
Okay.
Even though it looks nasty, it's just a string. And it is unique across the database. There is an account ID will not overlap with a contact ID. It's unique throughout the whole thing, as we'll see later with deletes. We have to parse this result to get that ID out of it. Again, I used the SAX parser. It's in the code. Go ahead and peek at it if you want. And if success was true, which in this case it was, we're going to return the ID. If it found false, there would have been another node called message that we would parse out to return the error message. And sure enough, we parse out that ID, and we can do whatever we want with it. All right, let's go into an insert multiple. Salesforce does allow you to put multiple entries in the XML so that you can insert three contacts at the same time in one XML. We don't use it in our integration because of knowing what was successful or not and having a partial success, you're done. So if two succeeded, one failed, you're stuck with that. Two succeeded, one failed. I prefer a single failure. I stop. I email the group, and it's like, guys, Jerry screwed up. Something's wrong with the code. You need to go look at it. So I don't use it, but it's available. So in this case, we're going to insert a new account called Tweedledee Battle Paddles. So here's the login. Here is the same creating a record in the temp table, the exact same insert object where we get back the ID of the newly inserted account. So here we are inserting the Tweedledee Paddle Paddles. Comes back. We get our ID. Now we're going to insert two contact records into the TT contact temp table. Two different Beatles, Beetle Bailey and Ringo Starr. And then we call the insert object from temp table method, the exact same one again. This time the XML has two objects. Begin object, its type is contact, here's all the fields. Begin object, its type is contact, here's all the field. I could also say begin object, its type is account. An insert account is the same big batch, it's one big batch. I don't do it, but it's available.
Yeah, preparing the XML.
What's that?
Yeah, we are preparing the XML.
Correct.
XML.
XML.
Yeah. So we are not reading. Are we reading the XML?
Are we reading it? I get this thing right next to me. I can't hear anything you're saying from over here.
You get the little wall engine.
Yeah.
Actually, we are preparing the XML data, right? So here. So are we reading the data?
Yeah. Right now, at this point, this is the XML that we've put together to send off. Let's see, where are we? S objects. So right now we're passing it in. We haven't read any data yet. So insert S object from temp table. Insert object. We've already been through all that code. And we get back two results. And of course, it's in order. So again, if you chose to insert two records at the same time, you're going to have to know which ID you went with which one. It just gets harder to manage. And we're done. All right. Reading data, it's not much different. It's almost the same thing. Log into Salesforce. In this case, I have a little method called query to temp table. I'm telling you, I want to use the TT customer temp table, and I only want customers where the account number is 1 or account number is 2. So let's take a look at that query to temp table method. I build an OSQL statement, which is a lot like SQL, just not as functional. Select a bunch of fields from a table in a where clause. I once again forgot to hit run, so we'll run that. Oh, tried to choose mobile. You saw that, I almost chose mobile. So select a bunch of fields from account where account number is 1 or account number is 2. So this was just assembled from the temp table with all the serialized names of all the fields. It just loops dynamically through it again. We then display it here, and now I'm going to run the query to temp table in the persistent procedure. Query to temp table, LP. In this case, it's running query operation in the SOAP API, inputting that SQL we just saw, coming back with a result. The result that comes back, both records. So we see we got back from Salesforce, it was done, and here's all the data. Now what I should have showed you before is proof. That we got both blah 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 pogs and Tweedle Beetle Paddle Battles inserted into our instance of Salesforce.
Right.
I did forget to show you that it actually went there. I wasn't lying.
Where's Ringo Starr?
Well, Ringo Starr, you know,
you
have to go into Tweedle Beetle Paddle Battles and get down to the two contacts.
I see, that's right.
Okay. All right. And back in a little bit of framework, I got back that big XML. It has to be turned into a temp table. All I did was use the SACS parser, loop through it, and create two records in the temp table. It comes back. And then I write out the JSON to a long charm display just to prove to you it was really there in the temp table. And there's the JSON coming out of that temp table. All right. I am actually going to jump ahead for the sake of time, because we get started a little late, to an update. Updates are a little strange because you can't null out a value just by making it blank. You can't just have in the XML name and then end name. You have to have the XML look a little different. So let's take a look at the XML, then we'll go through the example. Oh yeah. All right, back to the stub. Temp table, update, and the library. All right. So the XML, here's me. I'm getting back, oh, by the way, I should show you that. I'm getting back an ID for the account number 1, because again, I need the Salesforce ID. That's another reason to keep it local. So I'm getting back the Salesforce ID for account number 1. And then I'm putting into my temp table the ID that I need to update. I'm going to change the street to 32 Oak Park, and we're going to null out the billing city and number of employees. You have to create a separate set of XML fields to null, to tell it to null it out. So if we look at the XML that gets built, that's the ID coming back. We get, there's the ID field. Here's a fields to null, null out billing city. Fields to null, null out employee. And then we're going to set the billing street to 32 Oak Park, whatever it is. So you actually have kind of funny looking XML where you have to specify what fields to blank. So it's a little kind of a gotcha, but not too bad once you know it's there. Again, that was 90% of the battle, knowing it was there and just not being able to find it, and looking through all these curl examples and awful things out there to try and figure this stuff out was just terrible. All right, let's get by this. Now if we looked over at Salesforce, accounts, all accounts, good old blah, blah, blah. Sure enough, we've nulled out the number of employees and we've butchered the address. Well, now that we've butchered the address, we don't like this guy, let's delete him. This will be the last SOAP example. Log into Salesforce.com, get an ID to delete. So I'm going to delete, I get back the ID for where account number is 1. We'll fire this up. And as I mentioned before, IDs are unique across Salesforce. So I could pass in one XML one XML document, 12 contact IDs, 16 account IDs, 5 product IDs, and we'll go and delete them all. There's no reason to, they don't overlap. So that's why it wasn't quite the, you guys missed it. I mentioned before you came in that I had broken my leg in about 16 places, both the tip and fibula, and when I was doing this, it was a month after that, big pile of Percocets, taking the Percocets and doing this, picking the Percocets. So I blame a lot of this on the drugs. In this case, I could have just inserted the ID into the account table and then said do a delete, but instead I had created a separate temp table called TTIDs. I insert the ID into that temp table, call the delete S objects method in my class, run over that class real quick, A, B, C, D, delete S objects. We generate the delete S objects XML dynamically from that temp table. Here it is. Oh, this is the result coming back, sorry. Here's the delete, so it's a delete. Here's the ID. We're gonna pass that to the delete operation. That's the XML we need. So we run delete object from temp table in the persistent procedure. A, B, C. Runs the delete operation in SOAP, pass in XML, get back XML. Well, look at the XML. I feel like it's Groundhog Day. And it's a true, and there's the record of the one we deleted. And we go over to Salesforce, do a refresh. Your record is gone. All right, how are we doing for time?
Good.
Looking good, I assume, so far. Can't quite read it on the screen. Looks like 2:52. What do we have, 2:15 or 3:30? I'm not even sure.
2:15.
3:15, you mean?
3:15.
All right, good. So let me close these down. And we'll look at the rest of the stuff. All right. Dealing with REST, there is no SOAP. WSDL, there is no structure. It's basically calling a bunch of URLs. This is now REST, yeah.
The
major difference is the SOAP, you have to use the WSDL document. The WSDL document defines everything you can do. REST, you need a physical document telling you all the URLs to call because you're not calling it's unstructured, so to speak. It's whatever you want to define. So Salesforce has a bunch of URLs that you're going to do HTTP posts to. So you're not going to use the Progress SOAP object. You're going to have to use something. In our case, I used the .NET web client because it was just really easy and it worked really well. And you just post to certain URLs, and typically you'll be posting JSON because it's much smaller and getting back JSON. And that's basically it. It's still HTTP over the internet, HTTPS, making calls. It's not really that much different. And in Salesforce, it's very similar because, as you'll see, we do all the same things to log in almost. We do a whole bunch of different, the security token, all that fun stuff. So the first thing we have to do is log in. So we call the login to salesforce.com REST method. All right, there's that consumer key and consumer secret I talked about earlier because it needs to know what application we're going to hit. I'll go back to that afterwards. There's a security token that got emailed just like before. Yeah. And here is the URL. There's no WSDL. We don't know what to log into, so you have to know. So here it is, login.salesforce.com. There's my password. This is the .NET web client. I have my using statements up above to be able to use the .NET web client. So it's abbreviated down below. So we create a new instance of the web client. We set the encoding to UTF-8. I'm in a UTF-8 session. If you're not in a UTF-8 session, you're going to have to deal with the differences. If they put in UTF-8 data into Salesforce and you read it, it's coming up in as UTF-8 data. You're going to have to do your standard.
This is one of the encoding.
What about it?
UTF-8 is one of the encoding mechanisms.
Right, and I believe Salesforce.com is UTF-8 by default.
Yeah.
And when we first started doing this, we weren't. So we had to deal with that data, and it would be butchered. You know, what we brought into Progress was no good. It was just question marks. And now we're UTF-8, and it works great, so we're much happier. So we create a new instance of the web client. We set the encoding. For the login, we're going to add to the query string which looks very similar to putting a question mark at the end of the URL and then parameters. Same thing. We're going to do it using the query string add method. The password, the consumer key, the consumer secret, my login, and then the secured password, just like so. We're going to use the upload string to post to that URL, and we'll get back a JSON response. So let's fire that up. Yes, I did not choose mobile again. All right, there's our JSON response. Just like with SOAP, I only care about two things. I care about the instance URL. That's where I need to call. In A14.Salesforce, I don't need to call, you know, I can't call login again. And the access token, just like the session ID, an access token was created, has to be passed in the header of every call from this point forward. And there I am displaying it. This goes back to my stub. All right, rather than using a framework, I'm just going to assemble some JSON manually. An account name of test account, a number of 1234567, and a billing state of Massachusetts. We're going to insert this account into Salesforce. The URL is the instance URL we got back in A14, plus the URL for creating accounts. Again, you need the documentation from Salesforce to know what this URL is, the bulk API, the REST API documentation. There's no WSDL, there's no structure to tell you. We create a new instance of the web client, set the encoding, set the content type header. Here's that access token I warned you about. So there's an authorization header with a bearer plus the access token that got returned from the login. These three lines you'll see on every single call we do. And then we use the upload string method of the web client to do a post. We're posting that JSON to that URL. And then we get back a JSON response. I think I missed. And I hit it twice. We have to parse the JSON somehow, so I'm using the progress parser to pull out of that JSON. I want to go back and look at it again. So let's insert a second time, create a duplicate. So I double-clicked. Never double-clicked when I was practicing this. All right, so there's our instance URL. There's our ID. And I'm not going to be able to do it. Let's see, one more time. Let's have 12 of them. All right, there's the JSON coming back from the login. There's our instance URL. There's our access token being parsed from the JSON. Instance URL and access token using the progress object parsing model. Just pulling it out. Pulling it out of JSON. You can use anything you want. There's .NET parsers, anything you want to do. And there's the JSON for my insert. Just like the SOAP insert, you get back a success. If there was errors, there'd be errors. You get back the ID, which you should store. Identical. And let's go look at the 18 times I did that insert for the demo. Should see three test accounts. Test account, test account, test account. And then they all are. For all three times I hit go. All right, the get account, I'll let you guys go through the code later if you're interested in it. It's the same thing. It's a post to a URL, except now, actually we'll take one quick look at the, let's run it. We'll just look at the XML, we won't run through the code. So we'll get back a response from the login. There's our instance URL and access token. And we asked it for, oh, you can't see the URL here. I wish I'd displayed it. Let's come over here. And I can't see the screen, but the basics is it's just like the read, only you now pass an ID at the end of the URL, and it gives you back. Thanks. So it's identical. And again, you can go through the source later. All right, the last API is the bulk API. And just want to stop and ask if there's any questions on anything we've covered so far, because we're really almost out of time. It's pretty straightforward. And again, go through the code yourselves. It's just progress code. Pretty simple stuff. It's all there. I've run through the crazy stuff. The bulk API is very handy.
Upload
instance
ready to use SOAP and REST for your design practice.
The SOAP API is complete. So if you're integrating an application, you're going to have to use the SOAP API. The REST API is great for like a little mobile phone. You're going to be able to read some data. You're going to be able to push an account, write things, update a few things. You're not going to be able to merge accounts. You're not going to be able to
get back data that's changed between this time and that time to have two-way replication. So any type of business application that you're trying to integrate right now, you're going to have to use SOAP. Maybe later they'll have a full REST API. Maybe they'll decide. Maybe there'll be something else. Who knows? You know, we'll get used to this and there'll be a whole new thing. You never know. The bulk API, as I mentioned, we use it to download 500,000 opportunities, all the accounts, and put them into a temp table and create pivot tables from it. The idea behind the bulk API, I'm just going to run through the concept rather than the actual code. And again, in the objects that I provided, you can look at the source code and how I did it. You create a job telling it, I'm going to query the account table. Now here's the batch I'm going to query. It's the actual query, selects, you know, all the field names from account. It's going to get them all back. And it returns the ID to that batch, and it's off asynchronous. It's in a queue. Salesforce is going to process this and create a giant XML document for you, or CSV if you want later. So you have to, in a repeat loop, or whatever you want to do, keep looking. Is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? If you don't pause, it will always say no. Make sure you pause if you're putting this in a loop. I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. I didn't have a pause statement. It was terrible.
You need to put in there process events.
Process events didn't do it either.
No, didn't.
It was just the timing. Salesforce.com saw that I was making another request too soon from the previous request and just threw it away. And even though I did it 900 times in a row, it still said, well, I just rejected your request a half a second ago. Still too soon. Still too soon. Still too soon. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't figure out what was going on. So in the repeat loop, you're going to now be calling the check batch status API, which looks just like REST. It's just another call to URL. Is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? If it ever comes back and says it is done, that it is completed, you then call another URL to get the batch, where it actually sends you the XML. You get the XML back, and you end up having to parse that XML into your own temp table, just like before. And again, it all works, and it's all progress code, and feel free to go through it. And that's pretty much it.
How big is that return file in your case?
It's pretty big. I was surprised. I did not expect to be able to say, another thing we use, to say, give me all of the opportunities, 500,000 of them, and actually have it not time out. I just assumed something would break, and I'd have to batch it. I don't care if it takes 4 minutes, because it's happening overnight, pulling it in, putting it in the glob, and I'm doing it later. But if you wanted to speed it up, you can create 50 batches, send them all to Salesforce, and then pull back those smaller batches and get it done faster, because it's going to process all the batches at the same time over there in the Salesforce line.
And it's coming back as XML?
It's your choice. In the code I didn't show you, there's a content temp you pass saying whether you want XML or CSV.
Are you pulling it back as XML so you can feed it in to do the pivot table automatically? Or
I think we actually pull it back as CSV.
CSV.
I can't remember. And then
what
I
do you
just
use to parse the XML?
In these examples earlier, I used a Sax parser. I don't love it, but I just it's what we used 2.5 years ago, so it's still there.
And which version of Progress?
11.3.
11.3.
But this was able to be used on 11.2.
10, I think when I first wrote this. Maybe it wasn't 10. I forget what it was.
Probably 10.2.
I don't remember.
B or something like
2.5 years ago.
Yeah. 2.5 years ago.
10.2B probably, yeah.
that was the first.
Yeah. Right. And I think we were using, I know we were using the COM web, what was the COM object we used?
The DOM function?
I mean, or?
No. Instead of using the .NET web client that I showed you in this, we were using a COM object back then. And our Windows update broke it. We had to change it to the server-side COM object, and something else broke it. And we're like, well, why aren't we just using the .NET web client? And we did, and it worked great. It's fast. It's very nice.
And you could not do a read XML passing the XML schema
on top. On which part?
Do a temp table read XML or dataset read XML?
There was
passing the XSD?
We actually, you actually can. Oh, I can't see the screen from here, but the XML I showed these guys a little earlier comes back, and the node is named records. Why it's not named account, I can't tell you. And so the temp table that I showed you, that we have the serialized name for the Salesforce side and the database on this side, all I did is temporarily dynamically change the serialized name of the TT customer to be records.
Yeah.
And then do the read XML from the XML that came back, and it populated the temp table. Boom. And that's in the read read to temp table method. Did that. Very, very, very handy cheat, not having to parse the XML, just saying suck it in, and it worked. Again, shocked again that it didn't explode for some incompatibility. And that's basically it. Make sure you grab a thumb drive with the source code so you can go through it later. If you are going to integrate with Salesforce, you'll want it. And there's fun books up there to take.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charge Tom for the cost of the Vicodin.
It was funny. I did come back sooner than I should have.
I enjoyed it. It was very good.
There was a time where he turned something off, and we found out 6 months later, why is it off?
I didn't turn it off.
Yeah. My doctor actually said, you know, I give you another month or two.
Really?
Yeah. It was shattered. It was millions of little pieces. And I'm like,
I feel good.
I feel great. So I'm a software developer. I don't have to be sober.
Yeah.
But I did. I was joking about how I spent no time on this. I spent a little bit of time.
Yeah.
It was nice because we had just updated all that to the web client. So I had just gone through the code. Let's go.
That piece of it, that whole, using the .NET under the covers, sort of the non-visualized stuff.
Yeah, right.
It's just such a wealth of junk.
Everything. Just the stupid stuff we did, like validating email we did, but so many little things we do with
.NET. Cool.
Like,
oh, it's very cool.
It does everything.
Well, the new stuff that we just did with Outlook, having progress talk to an Outlook and bringing it up, and I think you're a couple short.
A couple of what?
Drives.
Oh, looks like the books are good for something.
Yeah. Now we have enough in this bag.
I wasn't going to take one if customers are grabbing them. So.
They're only 1 gigs and they're worthless.
Yeah, they have 1 gig?
Yeah.
You can put a file on.
That's good though. That's good.
They're 1 gig drives, take as many as you want.
Now the purpose for
it. Wipe them out.
I guess I'm coding this?
Yes,
that's the whole
presentation plus the code.
It's
all that.
In the cool. It's very nice.
Of course, it also figures out what your credit card number is on your.
Deletes your whole hard drive and sends all your information to me.
Yeah. It's cool. Very nice.
Just stop taking my stuff.
Make sure we don't leave anything behind. Looks like we're good.
Multipath.
Multipath. Oh yes, I should print those for everybody next year.
So what was your reason for integrating with Salesforce? Was it just that
we're fully integrated. The whole back office system.
Because they wanted data out of our system.
Salesforce only use Salesforce.
That's, okay. Oh, I see.
So they're the UI.
Gotcha. So and they only use Salesforce. So.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's why I missed that. Somewhere. Like, this is great, but why are we doing it again?
We technically were using Sales Logix before. And then the new sales manager came in and says, I know this. This sucks. We should get a new thing. I know this. It's going to be Salesforce because I've used this before.
Yes.
Okay.
How many times I've heard that story?
And then, of course, you start talking to the people. Of course, we can do this. And then trying to explain our logic, business logic, to them of a customer, an account, and all that. And, well, we want to have opportunities. What is an opportunity? And trying to explain that, they're going, we don't know how to do that.
Well, at least they said that, because usually they say, yeah, we can do that.
They did say that after about 2 months of going,
Still not working.
Then they said, okay.
Then they go, okay, can you do this?
And
yep.
The reason he mentioned that we're using the iframe with all those screens is if we were trying to pay them to do all the work, we would be out, our budget would be completely wasted on that.
The 500,000 records that come
out.
How big is that?
It was. It was pretty easy to solve. I can't remember what we did.
It's mixed. It's not big.
We had security.
They're small records. Probably 10 or 13 fields across.
So then does that whole thing get sucked into the pivot table?
What we basically just do is put it into a club. And then we have different ways that you can either write it to a CSV file, then use CSV file to.
Right, but once it's in the pivot, everything gets dumped into the pivot table, so you're not doing any sort of
We're not doing
processing.
Right,
just hand it to them and say,
here, have fun. You want to look at that. Of course, we try to map the fields to our local fields, contact sales.
Mm-hmm.
We might even include extra fields that we have in our data that Salesforce doesn't have.
Right.
But then, we just dump it and say, okay, here's the default view. You want to go manipulate it and fix, select the sales rep. That's up to you.
Uh-huh.
We don't want to. Cool. We are trying not to. We have four people, not including Mr. Bergman.
Right.
As developers. So trying to customize reports for every single person in the company is just, we have about 200 to 300 pivot tables already.
Yeah.
And it's a nightmare even to maintain those.
Yeah.
Because there's only four of us.
We're just going to start creating REST APIs.
Yeah, because when we transition. He figured the pivot table, or you guys, and he took credit for it. One of the two.
He did a presentation on the pivot table and why using the pivot table versus just auto loading. I know that's been in your process
for a very long time now.
We do.
We've probably been 10 years now.
It's that long ago. We do. For we have both. Computer literate customers and not. And it's almost more work trying to teach them pivot table.
It is.
A hand.
Yep.
It is. A lot of our salespeople will ask other people to reformat it and give it to them because they don't want to learn it.
Right. Right.
And it's very frustrating because. You're right. We give them a piece of paper. They're not going to like the look. They're going to call you and say, change it again. And we had that in-house. We had one person. We had two people dedicated in-house when I started. All they did was customize reports. And they had a workload. And we went, this is not manageable. The business can't keep having two people full-time doing reports. So... We thought of crystal reports. We said we went down that path, but then it just transitions the workload from us to maybe somebody that it has to write the queries and cubes and all that.
Jerry,
So we went down that path, but you're right. It is a hard transition for the business and for the users to go from it just looks like this to I have to go do the work. Wait a minute. But knowing that all that data is there and powerful.
And the analogy I used with them, we do an awful lot of label generation.
Yep.
And we actually partner with a company also in New Hampshire called Lawford. And there are a whole bunch of companies that will do label design pretty much as a mail work.
Right.
Where in their tool they create the form, you hand them a file and it goes. And what Loftware does that's smart that nobody else does, I send them a data file that has 250 fields, but the label design only calls out 5 of them. It doesn't throw an error.
Really?
Because all it says is, you must know, I'm only looking for what I'm needing. As long as the 5 things I need I find, it ignores everything else. So what it allows us to do is just like your pivot table,
just send
give you the whole...
Caboodle.
At a record level,
yep.
Here's every field associated with that record order,
right.
Product, production, whatever.
You basically flatline the record, but you still, here's the whole record. And
there's the whole thing, a couple hundred fields, I don't care.
If you want to change, no longer want to put the customer name and you want to put the individual's name? Well, it's in the flat file, so go ahead, do it.
So Gary and I came around to calling, we don't do the flying pigs. Remember the flying toasters that used to be? We don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I'll take a few of these for my
oh,
kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what we've been using them for, too.
What does it say?
Walter's Kluwer, Ovid Technology.
Yeah.
Ovid is our company name, but Walter's Kluwer is our parent company.
Yeah.
That we, it's a Dutch company that's into the publishing world, but they're not. We're a division of the health division. And they own, taxation, legal. They have a lot of things. And within our health division, there's about 10 different companies, and we're just one.
We have our own. over and... That's packaging. I mean, part of that is packaging. Can I?
Thank you.